Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. What you're about to hear is a show that I did with some guys who call themselves War, and it is Western Alliance Resistance. But it seems to me too many whites are thinking exactly the same thing. Tom Metzger, the late great Tom Metzger of Race and Reason and other things that he was involved in, he also had a thing called War, and it was White Aryan Resistance. So I can see that we all are on the same wavelength. All that racial telepathy is at work. And the more that I look at whites, the more I can see that I don't think we're going to have a problem getting onto the same page. Some people are worried about it, but I really don't see any reason to be concerned. And there are also some things that I've discovered about Adolf Hitler and the early Nazis, which just add to my understanding that, you know what, if we all give it our everything, we're going to get our message out there and we can turn people around. And there are many indications that, you know what, a lot of stuff is improving. I saw, for example, that young Americans, they say that in a recent poll that 50% of young people don't believe the Jewish Holocaust narrative. Anyway, returning to this show was to answer a number of questions and some key areas that we discuss, which I've never really touched on before. Is Eugene Tablanche and the AWB, and I discuss all the ups and downs and the issues relating to the AWB and what it could have been versus why it was what it was. We also talk a lot about secession, and we talk about general black dysfunctionality in South Africa. So there are a lot of topics that we go into. We were having some chit-chat before the show started, and I decided to leave the chit-chat in because it might be of interest to some people. So here's the show with War, Western Alliance Resistance. And by the way, the guy who's doing most of the interviewing is the same guy who did a show with me about Rhodesia.
Jan, out of curiosity, how long have you been, posting videos on the internet? Because I think I remember you from way back.
I think I'm quite sure I started only with videos. I only started in 2015, but okay. I was running my website from 2001. And I actually have got one or two little videos that we made in 2009. Someone made those videos. I don't know how. And I actually have like a couple of little videos, two or three videos from 2009. We tried it out on YouTube and I concluded this is a waste of time. It's not going to work. And we didn't bother further. But that's why I brought back my old African crisis stuff. Because in my archives, even with some of those little videos, I'll still bring them out and merge them into new videos because there's information and stuff that I've got that's old and it's already forgotten. I must tell you, people have got such a short memory. People have got such an insanely short memory and things have changed so much in the white right that literally 5 years and people are already starting to forget stuff. There are people who've joined the white right, and many people are red-pilled, and they've only been red-pilled recently. They have zero knowledge of history. I mean, like zero, okay? And even in South Africa, I'm talking South Africans, they know absolutely nothing. They don't even know what happened 20 years ago, never mind what happened 30 years ago, never mind what happened before then. There's tons of stuff people just don't even know about. So there's plenty to tell people.
It's shocking how many young people, young English people, and people in South Africa have never even heard of Rhodesia. I found, and it's crazy. So you're taking it really upon yourself to keep this keep these alive and make sure the next generations know your struggle.
Wow, whites that didn't know. You know what? I must tell you, I've got my South African ID book, because we've got ID books. My South African ID book is from 1993, and I've not replaced my ID book. It's literally falling apart, okay? But in that ID book, they've got a photo of me from 1993, and the country is still listed as Rhodesia. So I might even have a South African ID book that's among the last that actually lists the country as Rhodesia. And one day I was at a bank and I had to hand in my ID book. And the black woman says to me, "What country is Rhodesia?" So I said to her, "Well, the country that you know as Zimbabwe used to be called Rhodesia." And people know nothing. People know nothing. And I've been specifically, Chris, I've been specifically gathering all the Rhodesian stuff that I can get hold of. There's still some more that I'm going to get. You're going to get Rhodesian film footage like you've never seen. That's coming next year.
I can't wait for that. I've seen some of the, it's almost like you found this archaic, untouched footage from Rhodesia that literally hasn't seen the light of day for decades, and you're showing it to the world. You're doing the world a huge favor. It's very important, and it's crazy how little, very few people know about the struggles and the accomplishments of the Rhodies. Tell you what, it's a fascinating subject, and you don't know how fascinating it is until you really dip your toes into it. Then you just kind of fall headfirst into it. It's great here, but I'm shooing a few of the animals away, and I'll be ready 100% to go. Okay.
Yeah, you just say when you want to start.
Okay. All right, guys, I'm going to start in with this little intro here. I didn't have anything written down because I'm on the road, but that's the way it goes, so. All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. We're here in the Western Warrior chat, the War chat, and we have today, we're very pleased to announce that we have our guest, Jan Lamprecht, author Jan Lamprecht, down in South Africa. And we're going to be discussing several very interesting topics, maybe some of which you've never heard him discuss before. But we're here with Hail Teutonic, and in the name of Zion. Hey, Jan, how you doing down there, man?
Hi there. I'm doing fine, thanks. And you?
Oh, we're holding together up in America, but it seems like 2023 was a pretty rough year down there in South Africa. Because you still dealing with power outages every night?
Power outages, not every night, every day, day and night. It can come and go as it needs to, and I was worried that maybe we'd see a total collapse, but actually the normal process is that some whites who know what's going on come out and make a whole lot of noise in the liberal media, and then people suddenly start waking up. So we actually have avoided total collapse, and on the whole, it's not been bad, actually. And I myself have been busy working on my own little solar stuff and my own setup. There are photos that I'll be putting out some stuff on video, and then you'll actually get a bit of a chance to see some things. And I'm working on two videos, one about a nasty crime incident that happened here near my house, and then I have got some footage about how South Africans actually live through power outages. And I've got video footage, and you'll see how we actually do it, how people adapt, and you'll see the nutty side of a country that is failing, that is going downhill, thanks to being ruled by your inferior, basically.
Yeah, you know, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, go on.
I had read a story not too long ago about an African-run bank, and that it quickly collapsed because of theft from within. Have you heard of anything like that?
when you started down that path, I was just sitting and laughing because I used to work for a bank. I've worked for banks many times because of my computer experience. Oh man, let me just tell you a little bit about banks in Africa, because just the other day, I went to the bank to do a few simple things. There were a couple of things that I wanted sorted out, and I wanted to order something. So initially, I was just going to order it online, can't order it online. So eventually, I decided to go to the bank. I deal with more than one bank, also because you never know what might happen. So it's always good to have a backup, okay? Anyway, I go to the bank, and I phone them and I talk to them. And the bottom line is I'm starting to realize that the banks have changed their security so much that there are things. I had to go to two different banks to sort out security and related stuff, because listen to this. We've got internet banking here in South Africa. We've had it now for many years. It works fine. But you know what? The blacks are getting to do so much crime, and they are working as teams, and the people, you cannot trust anybody. You cannot even trust the blacks who are inside the bank. I know this from personal experience, okay, that when I was inside the bank, a manager told me that the people who are stealing the most money are not the outside criminals, it's the bank employees, okay? It's so bad now that I had to go and spend hours and hours in this last week to go to the banks to get my phones verified so that I can run the bank phone app. The sophistication of the security that you have to do now, I don't know about you people in America, but we have to use our fingerprints, sometimes both fingerprints, left thumb, right thumb, photographs, bio photographs, etc., all that kind of stuff in order to verify your phone, because you can no longer do everything on the internet, because the internet, the blacks have figured out how to get in and do all kinds of things. Another thing that I noticed recently was credit card stuff for the people who host my website, who are in America. For 2 months, my payments for the website hosting suddenly didn't go through. And the Americans are saying, you haven't paid, you know, you're behind, what's going on, you know? And then I discovered that the fraud is so bad in South Africa that now the fraud department of the bank has put even tighter restrictions on credit card payments. So I saw that 2 months in a row, they were blocking my stuff, and I decided to change the payments and do it in another way. Because when you have Christmas, see, it's Christmas time. Christmas time is stealing time. That's what the people do in South Africa. From October onwards, it's grand theft time, okay? And they steal more and more and more, and it goes crazy, okay? So the banks are struggling. Something else that I discovered earlier this year, I was talking to somebody about PayPal, and the very bank that I worked for used to be the only bank that actually enabled PayPal in South Africa, and you used to be able to do everything through that bank. I discovered that bank no longer verifies any PayPal-related stuff. And eventually, after talking to people, I concluded earlier this year that even PayPal is being hacked from South Africa to such a degree that it can't really function properly anymore. So the banking and the stuff is just going crazy because what the blacks do is the criminals get buddies on the inside. So So they get buddies inside the bank, inside here, inside there. They tell each other how to do it. They help each other. I've seen so many things. I even knew a black who had contacts in another government, in another African government, and he could pay somebody. Listen to this. He could pay somebody in a government to spy on somebody's phone through WhatsApp. So he just goes to the guy, pays him some money. Next thing he knows is he can get military-grade spying. I'm not joking. Military-grade spying, and they send all the WhatsApp messages straight to him, and he's told me he can just sit and read a person's private WhatsApps, no problem. No problem. So they all get so desperate that they then start stealing, and the one helps the other. It's insane. I must tell you, final story, internet. Because of, you remember that our friends, the Jews, came after me and got me in court, right? At that time, for various reasons, I ended up going to the cop. One time I went to the cop station and I was talking to a cop, and I mentioned to the cop, I operate on the internet. Do you know what the cop said to me? The cop said to me, "Are you stealing money?" I said, "No, I do genuine stuff on the internet." "Why?" And the cop showed me a big pile of files. And the cop told me this was all the fraud cases that they were getting. And they were getting fraud cases. Blacks in South Africa are setting up fake websites, selling everything from cars to dogs, and they are scamming people out of money. And people were going on the internet, buying this thing, buying that thing. Meanwhile, the whole thing's a scam. And I even asked them, like, what is the biggest amount of money that you've ever seen anybody steal through the internet? And the amount was a million rand. A million rand for a dog. That's about the amount of money you'd pay for a house like mine. Million rand for a dog, which in American dollars would be, I'd have to, in American dollars, you're looking at somewhere between about $50,000. So people, exactly, people are stealing like crazy. I was just talking to a guy the other day who told me that in the suburb next to me, that the blacks are now in the suburb next to me are quite a couple of guys who've got workshops and they fix cars. And the guy said to me, the blacks now come and they steal all the tools. They come with a truck and they grab the owner when he goes to open his shop, and then they steal all the tools, interestingly enough. So the blacks are stealing tools. That's a new one I've not heard of. So maybe they are fixing their cars or whatever. But the stories now are like you cannot believe that people are stealing left, right, and center. But so it's that's a good sign. It's a great sign. The country is going downhill. That's how it must be.
It sounds like there's instead of trying to fix the crime problem, they're just over putting more loops and hurdles for security. And that's also a warning to anyone who wants to visit South Africa. Be careful who you take tourist advice and tourist, you know, tips from, and make sure you're not giving it to some fake individual. But no, that's pretty rough.
Yeah, that's right up there with the Nigerian scam, you know.
Yeah.
And Indians, mostly. Indians are the
biggest
scammers. Can you guys imagine?
And the Nigerians.
Yeah.
Jeez. I'm sorry, Jan. Go ahead.
And the Nigerian.
The call dropped. Sorry about that.
No problem. We've got Nigerians in South Africa too. And when the Nigerians are here, they mostly do drugs and they go to high level forms of theft, mostly drugs, selling cocaine and stuff. But the country is going downhill, and I'm happy because this is the only way out. It's got to go this way. We can't carry on the other way. And Chris, oh yes, two things, Chris. The one thing is, any American who wants to come to South Africa, be very careful. Be very careful. Come and work with local whites. I want to tell you that if you as an American, if you as an American set foot anywhere in Africa, the American accent is very easy to detect. Everyone knows an American accent instantly. And when they hear an American accent, they immediately think, money, let's steal money from this guy. They're going to scam you in one way or another. So be very careful in that.
Everyone becomes all of a sudden incredibly nice and cooperative. And, you know, and yeah, you got to watch out. Watch out.
Yeah, great advice. And thank you for the warning, too. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Speaking of Nigerians, in some of your latest work, Jan, you mentioned, you know, that African inventor and innovator episode. You talked recently about, you know, covered a little bit of the book, The Myth of German Villainy, and your newest series, the God of War series, which is really eye-opening, jam-packed. Talk about a concentrated, you know, piece of, you know, just a wonderful documentary you're putting together. Do you want to go into that a little bit, as much as you can?
Okay, let's go. Gods of War. I did an intro to Gods of War. My original idea with Gods of War was I actually wanted to focus on the greatest generals of all time, because it's very important to understand them as people and to understand how warfare actually works. The vast majority of all whites never get to learn anything about the military. You are just told that all problems can be solved through cooperation, that you just got to buy everything at the shopping mall and solve all problems through cooperation, and those are the only options you have. Life is actually much more sophisticated than that, and there are many problems you cannot solve. You cannot solve through cooperation. So I did the intro to Gods of War, discussing quickly, why do humans fight? Because everyone's got such a very negative concept about warfare, and you don't realize, and this is especially true when you get to racial stuff, eh? When you get to racial stuff, you will see that there are problems you cannot solve. Whether it's with Jews or blacks, you cannot solve those problems just through talking. With a Jew, you're wasting your time even talking to a Jew, okay? So the purpose of Gods of War is not to encourage brother wars. It's more about the fact that warfare will be a reality, and it's going to be racial conflict, and these things cannot be solved in any other way. So I went into there, and I just dug into some issues there. I brought up a Jew in Canada who does what Jews always do, which is talk a lot of shit. So it was a Jew who went and he wrote a whole freaking book, and he was doing a whole bunch of stuff about how the world is getting better, when in fact the world is not getting better, and how everything's coming right, and it's great that gay people aren't being criminalized, etc., and it's all a great sign. So I just went into the issue of, you know, is there evidence that the world is getting better? Because I don't see any evidence that the world is heading towards peace. I am looking at Africa and all African nations, and I can tell you, the violence and level of dysfunctionality is increasing all the time, and there are new conflicts and new stresses coming up. I cannot see in any way, shape, or form that the world is becoming more peaceful. That is a Jewish liberal myth, okay? Anyway, so I just tackled that, and I went into the deeper issues of why do people fight, and why there are times when it's totally unavoidable. And our ancestors, by the way, thought our pre-Christian ancestors even said, no, war was noble. That it's the thing that you have to do. And so it's the intro, and the fun stuff starts after that. I will see to it that I put out a video at least one video a month regarding Gods of War related stuff, because I'm going to tackle every conceivable aspect of warfare. We'll look at battles, we'll look at lessons learned. I did a video in recent months about advice for nations that are in hopeless situations. I quoted Guderian and von Manstein. quite a lot of people mm-hmm. like that video. Well, one of the ones that I'm going to be bringing out is to show you the sheer timelessness of life and how nothing ever changes. I want to show you exactly the same stuff as told by Julius Caesar, but you'll fall on your back. So there's going to be lots and lots of different kinds of things that I'm going to bring out, and you're going to start seeing all sorts of aspects of war, and you'll begin to realize how clever white men really are and the amazing thing that white men have done in the military sphere. Next thing, the myth of German villainy. The myth of German villainy is a really great book. I regard it as the greatest book written about the Germans in modern time, let's say in the last 10 to 20 years. It's a fantastic book written by an American Navy guy who had a lot of life experience. It's fabulously researched. Data in there is awesome. And we will be revisiting that book. It's got tons of information. Linked to this is a video that I put out maybe more than a year ago. It was a book that was based on a German book. The English title of it was The War That Had Many Fathers. And that was a book about all the things that you haven't been told about World War II. That was a German book. Between that German book and the myth of German villainy, you will learn hundreds, literally hundreds of things that you were never told about World War II. You will fall on your back at all the things you were never told about World War II. Everything that you believe you know about World War II is mostly just Jew Anglo propaganda. That's it. So, okay. Myth of German Villainy, great book. Great book.
That's regarding Benton Bradbury, by the way. But go on. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No problem. The book, the video about black innovators and inventors, that came up as a result of one of the white man chats that I was having with those guys, with Mike and Brandt, who are Americans who've been to Africa. And Mike was talking about his experiences in Nigeria, but he's actually traveled a lot more to Africa. So Mike actually then quickly sent me those videos about the black inventors, and I started looking at that, and I thought I'd just compare it with white. And because what you've got is the 2020s, and you've got blacks who are trying to do what the Wright brothers were doing 120 years ago. And I show the many, many differences between whites and blacks. That was not even meant to be comprehensive. There are many different aspects of black dysfunctionality that I can show when it comes to all kinds of stuff. For example, in that video that I did about the video about witchcraft, you will have noticed that black witch doctors are offering services, witchcraft services, so that when you build a building that you have good luck. Now, white people don't need good luck when they build buildings, okay? White people know that if they go and do a proper job, that the building's going to be absolutely fine. But it shows you how degenerate the blacks are and how full of failure they are, that in their minds, you need good luck when you are doing a building project. We don't need good luck because we know if you don't do your work properly, your stuff ain't going to work, your building's going to fall down, etc. But their things that they were offering was, we're going to find a child, we're going to cut them up and put their body parts there or put their blood there, and that's going to give you good luck. So it just shows you how demented their thinking is and how useless they are. And, a lot of witchcraft is about needing good luck. And even black politicians and black billionaires, I'm not joking when I say this, black politicians and blacks who are billionaires go and ask witch doctors to get them good luck so that they can win elections, strike business deals, etc. It just shows you the demented nature of these backward people. And
before you go on, let me ask you a question. about a story. I need to know whether it's true or not. There was a story about seven black Africans that were told to rape a crocodile in order to perform better in the bedroom. And two of them were eaten by the crocodile. Have you heard that story?
Okay, I'll tell you the origins of that story. I posted that story on my website. When that story came out, liberals ran around as usual saying it's not true. But the real source of that story was a Zimbabwean was run by whites. Whites were running that website. And so I followed that website a lot. It was called ZW News. I used to follow that website a lot in the early days of African crisis, and I knew the people linked to it. And I found that the information that came from ZW News was always dead on the money. These are the remnants of the Rhodesians that were still living in Zimbabwe. So because that story came from ZW News, I take it as total truth. I don't see any reason to not believe it. And I had much contact with whites from Zimbabwe in those times. They told me other crazy stuff as well. And we spoke face to face. I knew them. It's all good. So that kind of crazy stuff you'll find, and you'll see even more stories in that video. You know, I did stuff. My favorite was the black guy. My favorite story was the black guy who had sex with a sheep because the devil told him to do it. And he denied having sex with a dog because he's only loyal to sheep.
and I heard one that had his genitals chewed off by a hyena to bring him up.
Yeah.
So, can I answer a question on this? So, white people are literally being sacrificed for buildings, correct? And is that what you were saying, that their body parts are being used to bring good luck in the building structures?
I don't know if it was white people. I think
let me just correct that. Okay. As far as I can tell, all the witchcraft is the killing of blacks.
Okay.
So it's not white. It's not white. Especially I don't know of any instances where whites are being killed for their body parts.
Yeah.
Okay, because we hear stories. I heard one recently that Chinese were selling canned meat of white people, and I guess it's like a staple in Africa. Is that true? Have you heard anything about that?
No, I've never heard of that, and I don't think that would ever happen in Africa. The whites might have their problems, but the blacks are not slaughtering us like that. No way.
I have a quick couple of comments for you. You continue, Jan. You mentioned your episode on Guderian, and when you quoted Frederick the Great about, I don't remember if it was Guderian or Frederick the Great who stated, there's no desperate situations, there's only desperate people or something like that. But if you're out there listening, I highly recommend you check out Jan's series on Guderian. Anything that Jan does on General Guderian is absolutely top notch. He also did a thing on Guderian and a lesser known officer in the SS about 6 months ago about taking orders and on the Eastern Front. It was very good. And the last thing before you continue, you mentioned voodoo and even how the African leaders are like swept up in it. They're so stupid that they're swept up in it. And in my time studying African leaders, whether North, South, East, or West, that immediately brought up in my memory, Masayas Nguema in Guinea, and how crazy voodoo he was, like associated with voodoo. Like all these black African leaders are so backwards that they almost have a personal voodoo witch doctor with them to almost give them advice on policy and making decisions for the country in general. It's crazy. So, but yeah.
Yes, among blacks in the black mind, voodoo is superior to everything else. It's superior to Christianity, and it's superior to science. So they genuinely believe it. And, of course, there are many. One could take advantage of it if you needed to as a white.
Yeah. And it doesn't that kind of – that voodoo type of thing go into the topic of that lady in Zimbabwe who tricked the government for several months that she could bring diesel up through a rock just by tapping it with a stick. Didn't you mention that? Oh, Jan's
Cole
muted.
Was. I think if you go to. Yes, I mentioned that, and I think the source. I think if you go and look at the source, you'll find that the source for it was, I think, something like the Daily Mail in the UK. So a British newspaper published that, and and it's hilarious, hey? That this witchcraft stuff could con the whole government, and they even had a special. They even had a security guard for the witch so that she's safe, and they even had a security guard for the special rock. So, you know, as I said there, you know, blacks are superior to whites. Here are the whites. They've got to go and dig for oil, drill it out of the ground, transport it or pipe it to a factory to process it, to eventually turn it into diesel. But, hey, blacks are cleverer. You just got to get the right stick with the right witch and knock on the correct rock and bang, there's your diesel. And so the whole thing is ridiculous. Sorry, I didn't hear.
I was going to say
we're not talking a farmer. We're not talking a little business or an individual farmer on his land. We're talking about the entire Zimbabwean government here. So, yeah.
I believe that we've seen new videos of their planes and their helicopters. They're reinventing. We already have the inventions. Why aren't you using, you know, like with the technology that we already have and applying it towards what you have? But no, they have to reinvent the helicopters and planes. Like, we didn't know what we're doing. So we... It's kind of funny. I like posting those videos and watching them. So it made me think of that with the rock and the diesel.
And even Jan, you showed during that footage of the Wright brothers and the white inventors and innovators in America in the 20s, the black, there's footage of a black man utilizing, you know, who's around with those white inventors, and the black man who's around the white people and being educated by the white people is even, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but there was a footage of a guy alongside those white inventors, and he's one of them's black. But even the black guy who's around white people is just a century ahead of the blacks in Africa in modern day. It's something else.
Yes. And you know, if you look at the equipment that the blacks were using when they were inventing, trying to build their aircraft, I was looking at like the blacks with the welding machine. I don't think welding machines existed at the time of the Wright brothers. You know, so here are these blacks hauling out an electric welder and they're welding their stuff. Meanwhile, their whole thing is totally stuffed up because you can't make a plane out of solid metal. But yeah. Hey, that doesn't enter their calculations, you know. And they make all kinds of mistakes. And did you notice the Wright brothers? When I looked at that Wright brothers film footage, I was absolutely impressed with the way that the Wright brothers needed to get acceleration for their plane, and they had that very heavy weight that they pulled up into that tower, and they dropped that weight, and that weight gives that their little aircraft like a rocket-assisted takeoff. Hey, such brilliant, clear thinking 120 years ago from, quote, bicycle mechanics, who are more educated than modern black, quote, computer specialists.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That same exact thing crossed my mind when I saw that giant, almost giant dumbbell just pull down the plane to give it acceleration while the black will just have the whole village push the plane. That's something else. That if you're listening, go check out that latest upload from Jan about the black innovator. It's something else. And try not to laugh. I mean, try to take it in as a learning experience. Actually learn, and no matter how funny it is.
You know, in that video that James was talking about, the black inventors with the helicopters and the airplanes, I don't know if any of you guys caught it, but one of the black guys that was doing the welding, he wasn't wearing a helmet. And every time he went to hit the weld, he would close his eyes instead of paying attention to.
Oh, right. I remember that.
I never noticed that.
Yeah, flash burns.
Nice one. I didn't notice that either, but now that you mention it, he wasn't wearing a helmet. Yes.
Yeah. How could he see where he was welding? You got to just guess. That's wow. Yeah, the Wright brothers were doing it. It would have been nuts and bolts.
Yeah, it would have been riveted or nuts and bolts back then, right?
Yeah.
But what do we know? You know, luckily they taught everything.
Well, yeah, speaking of the...
I Wright brothers. I read an article the other day, or I was looking at a headline, they're saying that they actually say the car was invented in Africa now.
Yep.
I don't know. Have you heard that one?
I did. Yeah.
Never heard it, but I can tell you the wheel never existed in Africa. The wheel. Never mind anything else. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, speaking of the Wright brothers, that's the latest blackwashing that's going on right now. Is they're trying to claim that the Wright brothers were actually black.
Oh, the wrong brothers.
No way.
Yeah. I just posted it in the main chat, so.
The Washington brothers? That's what it's going
to
be?
Isn't that...
That is crazy.
Tyrell and Tyrone. Who would that be? Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence? Yeah.
There you go. It's comical. It's almost, it actually, it's comical. It really is. It's so out of hand.
I like how the guy can't even spell the name Wright properly.
Now, before we're going to move on here. Now, I got to say, I think we're all happy. I think I speak for everyone here and listening when I say good riddance to the piece of shit, Henry Kissinger, the guy who's personally responsible for putting the last nail in the coffin in the country of Rhodesia, essentially tricking their leaders. And so good riddance to that piece of crap. I know that the Chinese were extremely upset that their Henry Kissinger passed away. But it's kind of good news in a world that's spiraling downhill.
I was very happy to see the last of Henry Kissinger as well. The only thing that disgusted me was that he lived to be 100 years old. I'll bet you it's because of American medical technology. He shouldn't even have lived that old. That man is a piece of crap. That Jew is a piece of crap. Something that I discovered about Henry Kissinger a long time ago, somewhere in my old archives, I've still got the book, I'll need to get back to it. But even in 1945, when he was in the U.S. Army in military intelligence in Germany, I came across references. There was a book that was written that even then, Henry Kissinger was an agent for the Soviet Union. So he was a traitor probably from right in the beginning, though other people tell me that he might have even been torturing German soldiers, maybe even sexually torturing them in Germany in 1945. It's possible. I haven't seen details on it. But Henry Kissinger
wasn't
he? The, is a very nasty Jew, yeah?
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Yeah, it was part of
sorry, just repeat that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but he was part of the OSI in the early in the Army, the U.S. Army. I think that was a precursor to the CIA, correct? OSI.
Yes, I understand what you. I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Henry Kissinger. Fast forward to later. I mean, Henry Kissinger played a big role in the destruction of Richard Nixon. And I must tell you that when I look back on my life and on the various presidents that you Americans have had during my lifetime that I've been able to like watch on TV and listen to and find out about them, I have a lot of respect for Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was actually a pretty good guy. And Richard Nixon also seems to me to have had the most historical knowledge of any American president in my lifetime. There are a bunch of things that people have released from Richard Nixon where he speaks about Jews, he speaks about blacks, he is quite racist in the White House. And I've read his book, The Real War. He wrote that book after he was chased out of power. And I must tell you, it was an excellent book. It was the best book that I've read that came from an American president. So I have a lot of respect for Richard Nixon. And this Jew Kissinger was very close to him and played a big role in helping to destroy him. So that whole thing about the outing of Nixon, when I was a kid, that whole Nixon scandal was a huge scandal. But it was a junk scandal. It was minor. It was minor compared to what others have done. So, you know, I feel very sorry for Richard Nixon. I think he was an all-round, he was the best of the American leaders since then.
I've heard this over, you know, as I've actually been familiarized with that same exact narrative over the last year and a half or so. I've seen some of the quotes and some of the things that Richard Nixon wrote about Jewish influence. And I remember the USS Liberty having something to do with this here, what he said or something like that. I'm not sure. I know that was LBJ who was in power, but I know that when you're attacked as hard as Nixon was, he was probably doing some stuff right. And that Kissinger guy, him and George Soros probably were good allies in World War II for the communist pieces of scum. So good riddance to both of them.
Well, I didn't, I've never dug into the history of Soros, but regarding Kissinger, when he came to Africa, you must understand that the whites in Africa, all along, the whites in Africa wanted America to help them. And we in Rhodesia could not understand. We used to talk among ourselves, and people could not understand that we are fighting exactly the same enemy in Africa that America is fighting in Vietnam. And that in actual fact, you know, if we're fighting the same enemy that's using the same tactics, you can go and look at the tactics that the Viet Cong were using in Vietnam, and those tactics that they were using, someone's moving around a lot and there's a bit of background noise. The tactics that they were using in Vietnam are exactly, you'll see, it's exactly the same modus operandi as in Rhodesia and the Portuguese colonies. Anyhow, the one thing I just want to say is that whites were always hoping that America could get involved in the Southern African issue, especially with Rhodesia. And when we heard that the American government was sending someone to Africa, we were all so hopeful, hey? We were so hoping, finally, America is here. Maybe America's going to help us fight this communism because the blacks are commies, okay? Of course, we didn't know about the Jewish involvement. But anyway, and there comes Kissinger, and he starts talking. And just before Kissinger came, in those final years with Nixon, there was a concept called détente. And détente, when I look at détente, it's a lot like modern liberalism, where Jews have basically come and done a kind of a guilt trip. You know, liberalism, if you look at the way that liberals and Jews market blacks nowadays, they basically are indicating, oh, you see, the black people are like this because you white people were so nasty to them. You were so nasty to them, you never gave them a chance, and that's why they're like this. No, that's not true. The blacks are like that because they're low IQ, and it's a DNA problem, and it's a racial problem, okay? It's actually got nothing to do with how whites treated them. But they did a similar thing with communism. With communism, they came and suddenly said, they called it détente. And détente basically said, if you stop fighting the communists will stop fighting you. So that was the big thing that the Jew Kissinger came and pushed everywhere, okay? And he even met with the leader of Rhodesia, Ian Smith, and he met the Prime Minister of South Africa, Forster. Forster, by the way, when he was younger, he was Ossewar Brandwacht. They were actually neo-Nazis. They were actually Boer Nazis or semi-Nazis. And they were pro-German when he was young. Unfortunately, by the time he actually became the Prime Minister, his mind had been rotted away, and he was much softer and much more useless. And so he bought into détente big time. So first of all, Ian Smith of Rhodesia was fooled, and Forster was fooled like on steroids, okay? Forster basically came to believe that if South Africa sacrificed Rhodesia and gave Rhodesia away, that if South Africa sacrificed Rhodesia and gave it to the blacks, that the blacks of Africa, because all of Africa was against the whites of Southern Africa, all of Africa was against us. So he was made to believe that if Rhodesia gets given to the blacks, that all the blacks of Africa will be so grateful to South Africa that they will stop making noise about apartheid. And of course, it was total junk. But Forster, like a fool, started doing trips across Africa and going to different African countries, and they'd come out and they'd sing and dance. And the fool actually believed that these blacks were suddenly changing, which is not true. Nothing changes. Anyway, Forster was the biggest fool. And then the whole thing, the whole storyline that they sold Rhodesia was the American government, basically Kissinger told the Rhodesians. He said to the Rhodesians, there are no options for Rhodesia. Okay? He said that Rhodesia cannot remain under white rule. It cannot, and that's the end of the story. You have to strike a deal with the blacks. And that was the basic story. That was the basic option that Forster gave to Ian Smith. And that basically led down a path. And 4 years later, Rhodesia's gone. Also, Kissinger may well have been involved in telling the South Africans to tell the Rhodesians to let all the black leaders that we had imprisoned, to let all the black leaders go. And they let them out, and that was a bad move because we let them go, and then all they did was they moved into black countries and strengthened their armies and started fighting it. Robert Mugabe was one of them, and so forth. So Kissinger, basically, the visit by Kissinger and what Kissinger did to the white leaders of South Africa and Rhodesia, and this coming now from the American government, but nobody's thinking in terms of it's a Jew, and here this Jew's coming, he's giving you a bunch of bullshit. You go down that path and you destroy yourself. So at the end of the day, 4 years later, Rhodesia's gone. And South Africa finds itself alone, and all of Africa, including the country that you've just handed over, are now against the whites of South Africa. So it backfired on Rhodesia, backfired on South Africa.
And yeah, sounds like the Kissinger and his cohorts got South Africa and Rhodesia so thirsty for that American weaponry that they were willing to take the first piece of advice handed over by the Jews in power. And was that the Winds of Change speech given in 73 or 74, or was that something else? If you
No, the Winds of Change speech, the Winds of Change speech was back in 1960. That was when the British abandoned Africa. That was the big moment. That kicked off all the killing and the wild stuff. Everything from the 1960s until the fall of South Africa, you could say, is the result of the Winds of Change. When Britain abandoned Africa, you know, then we were on our own. We had to struggle as best we could.
Yeah, and people don't realize that these black leaders that took over eventually were part of these black communist movement, funded and armed a lot primarily by Joe Slovo and his communist outlets. And these murderous communist terrorists like Mugabe and Mandela and all these other people. And but that's not to say that there wasn't attempts within an organized attempts within white South Africa to save the Afrikaner, you know, situation. And that's one thing I wanted to bring up with you is the AWB and Eugene Terry Blanche. I don't know, is that how you pronounce that? Is that Blanche or Blanche? I don't know, but. I know that there's several people out there that have been looking forward to you covering this topic, and his 1993, was it 93, attempt in Kenton?
Yeah, Eugene Terblanche was around for quite a long time. He's a very interesting character, and that name, we pronounce it Terblanche. And it might even be, when I look at that name, it has like a French sound to it. So it might even be that Terblanche was a descendant of the French Huguenots, because there were some French Huguenots who also came and mixed in with the Boers. And, you know, so there's a bit of French there as well. Anyway, Eugene Terblanche wasn't a bad guy. And there are many people who've got lots of things to say about Eugene Terblanche and the AWB, but I want to give you my input because I've spoken to many people who at various times in their life were members of the AWB. So the AWB in a nutshell was a militia movement. So imagine you guys in America now, you form your own militia. So it's not part of the government, It's your militia and it's your guys and you've trained them. But basically, Terblanche had formed a militia of whites. Militia was so big that it was basically a functioning army. Eugene Terblanche possibly had the biggest personal private army of any white man in the Western world since World War II, unless there's somebody else that I don't know about in some other country. The AWB was huge. At its peak, it had 900,000 members. So just That's keep in awesome. Mind, the population of South Africa at its peak, at the peak of South Africa's population, it was maybe 5.5 million, 6 million whites. So 900,000 members is a lot of people. And then of those members, he had like a military force, an actual like combat trained force of like 100,000, okay? So he had real guys who were really trained to high standards and they were armed and they were keen to fight. And the vast majority of the people, probably like the vast majority of the AWB was definitely Boer, Afrikaans, but there were lots of racist white English who were also in there. And the AWB was basically this militia that saw the blacks specifically as a future enemy and who realized that whites are going to have to fight blacks by them, you know, face to face, one on one, even though they are outnumbered. And I must tell you, the men and the women of the AWB were keen. They were keen to be let off the leash, to get stuck into the blacks and just start slaughtering them. Okay, but now there are questions as to, you know, what did he achieve? Why didn't he achieve more? Because he had a real army. He had an army that was bigger than the Rhodesian army. He had 100,000. He had 100,000 people, I think, at its peak. Like actual trained soldiers, okay? And all those guys, by the way, all those guys were either ex-police or ex-military themselves. So he had probably the greatest militia that you've seen possibly since since anything other than what Hitler or the Spanish did, okay? But Eugene Tiblange himself, he was a lowly sergeant, I think, in the police, and he was a good speaker, and he could sweep people up. Now, there are people who say that he was sponsored, that somebody gave him money. There's even talk that the CIA may have given him some money to do this. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who was behind him. The fact is, he kicked off something and he ran a thing. And I think it started, I don't know the exact years that it started, but by the time I came to South Africa in the 1980s, it had already existed for years. And the AWB was proud. They had their uniforms. And they were keen to get stuck into these blacks. I want to make that clear to you. Everyone who was in the AWB was not afraid to fight a race war. They were willing to fight a race war by themselves, without the army, without anybody else. They just needed to be let off the leash. But what happened was, Eugene Tiblange, being in South Africa, he's got a private army, but is he allowed to just do as he pleases? And the answer is no. He's the government and the military is controlled by white Afrikaans people, and they've got the powers of the state. They can spy on him, they can monitor him, etc. So I do not know the deepest stuff behind the politics of the AWB, behind their control, behind their plans to do things. I did meet on some occasions some guys who'd been colonels in the AWB, and they told me a few things, but I never really dug deeply into the AWB and its hierarchy and its actual plans. But they were kind of waiting for the war to start, sort of a thing. Then what happened was, they did manage to get involved in a conflict where, when South Africa was becoming liberal and the president, F.W. de Klerk, was starting to weaken and soften, and he was starting to let the ANC, Nelson Mandela's African National Congress, was starting to unban them and starting to let them get active and so forth. There were times when these blacks and Jews were actually active in some of these black homelands. There was a particular black homeland, I think it's the Ciskei. And how apartheid worked was that some of the South African territory was handed over to blacks, and blacks were given independence. Some of these homelands were, on paper, officially independent from South Africa and ruled by blacks. Blacks had their own government, blacks had their own democracy. So in one of those states, There was violence that came from the ANC, and Eugene Tiblange and his people, and also some ex-Rhodesians, all got involved in that homeland to try and fight back. So he had a bunch of white right-wingers who were trying to help a let's call it a pro-white black state, and to defend blacks from communism. And that's where they got involved, and there was some fighting there. But there was a general from the military, his name escapes me now, a very famous general, and that general also got involved there, but he came and he kind of calmed things down and also betrayed some of the white guys. So basically what happens is the AWB is a militia, but ultimately it's answerable to the government and the police. It can't just do anything at once. And then you get other whites from the government coming in and also getting involved and misdirecting the whites. So if the AWB had been left alone to just go there and just kill people and just shoot who needed to be shot, they could have done great. But the problem was, the AWB is always on a leash, and the AWB is limited in what it can do. At a point in the conflict here in South Africa, the AWB did let off some bombs as well. They even exploded a car bomb that killed blacks. So they did a bunch of very violent things a couple of times, and guys went to jail. But the problem was that the AWB is never really free to operate as a proper army. And ultimately, the AWB and its leadership was limited by the law. If they went and did certain things, they themselves would be jailed. So that's the sad story about the AWB, is that you've got to remember the AWB cannot just do what it wants to do. It's under the law. And Eugene Tablanche and any of those other guys could also have been arrested. So, you know, if they wanted to really go wild, they would have all had to get together as an army, and everyone would have to stick together, and they'd have to probably fight off the police and the army, because the whites who are in charge are now liberal. So the whole thing is a mess. The AWB is something that could have been awesome, but I don't think they ever had a chance to really be awesome, because all those leaders could have been arrested within a day. And that's the sad story about the AWB. However, for the younger people who are alive today, even some of the minor things that the AWB did will appear pretty amazing. But the truth of the matter is that the AWB actually had the physical power to do even more amazing stuff. So they could have been really awesome. I do think in the future for all whites that we're gonna be heading down the path of AWBs and militias. That's where we've got to go. And everyone's going to face that problem, that the cops can come and arrest you.
Example of one of those amazing things is that incident in 1993 in Kenton, where they shut down de Klerk, you know, and stuff like that. This may be a stupid question. Because you have Rhodesians fighting in the AWB. Was there a good population of Portuguese people fighting in the AWB? Were you allowed to be a part of the AWB if you weren't purely of European lineage? I know that you may not know that, but could you?
My best guess is that the Portuguese would definitely have been allowed in there. If there were any Portuguese who wanted to be there, they would have been allowed, because there were Portuguese that were allowed in other things. There were Portuguese who were allowed in the special forces. There was a thing called 32 Battalion. 32 Battalion was almost like the French Foreign Legion of apartheid. 32 Battalion is the French Foreign Legion of apartheid. And there were lots of people in there. There were blacks in there. There were Rhodesians in there. There were Portuguese in there. So, yeah, the AWB would definitely have let the Portuguese in, because the Portuguese are white in South Africa. Yeah. Definitely.
True.
So the Portuguese were never viewed as non-white.
And I remember in our original chat we had over Rhodesia and the creation of Rhodesia, some of the most fiercest fighters for Rhodesia, some of, were former communists, and who they took in, and they fought even more fierce against the communists that they were once fighting for. But
correct.
Yeah. But that's a great explanation of AWB. And what do you think? Do you think it exists much of any day, much modern day? I highly doubt it, considering there's no purely racial organizations allowed, on the basis of race in South Africa today. So, I mean, I figured it'd be almost extinct, right?
Well, there is actually a video that I did in 2017 where I attended an AWB meeting where the leader of the AWB spoke, but I don't think I recorded it. What I did afterwards was I did a video and I summarized what the AWB leader said, and I did that in 2017. Let me explain something about South Africa. You are not allowed to have a strictly racial organization, but there are ways that whites have learned to figure out how to maneuver around the law. So So they form an organization and they say that they're allowed to have non-whites in there, but in reality, no non-white will ever pitch up there. So there are things that are done like that, where the whites skirt the edge and whites are able to get whites into an organization. I'm not going to mention others where I've seen it, but whites are not stupid, and whites also know how to skirt the law quite nicely, and they've done it in more than one place. The AWB, though, I think the current leadership kind of lost its direction, and I think they've lost lots of people, and that the people that I saw in 2017 were probably among the last ones who are still loyal to it. But I think it's kind of faded away. But there are other groups. Whites can always create new groups as well. And there are other groups like the Buddha Legion, the Stadlanders, and all those. There are quite a few people who've got their little militias. Plus, there may be groups of whites that you don't know anything about who never advertise anything. So there's all sorts of funny things that could exist.
And I'm sure the AWB took a serious hit in 2010, 2011 after the murder of Terre Blanche by a few of his workers. And if just in case your listener don't know that, he was murdered in 2010, and in his sleep, unfortunately.
Yes. I have some things to say about that. Yes, you're right. When he died, that basically knocked the organization in a huge way. A lot of things in life focus around the leader, especially if the leader is the founder of the thing. You know, it's the same thing with Hitler and so forth. So if the leader goes, then a lot of stuff breaks down, people quit and so forth. But I want to tell you that in my view, I wrote about this on African Crisis back then, because I was doing African Crisis when Eugene de Blanche died. I still need to continue hunting through my old archives. But I recall that prior to the murder of Eugene de Blanche, that Julius Malema, who's still around and still talking about killing white people, Julius Malema was visiting Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe. And Julius Malema visited Robert Mugabe about 2 weeks before Eugene de Blanche was killed. And when Julius Malema and Mugabe were talking, they sometimes issued press statements afterward. At the time, there was a black website in Zimbabwe that I saw them put out a story where they were predicting that secretly Julius Malema and Robert Mugabe had decided to start farm invasions in South Africa, and that this would happen shortly, within the next couple of weeks. And that was published about 2 weeks before Eugene de Blanche was killed. Among his killers, there were people who killed him who did not work for him. One of his killers was a Zimbabwean. And from what I could understand, it was a Zimbabwean who also had been in the Zimbabwean military. So I, back then, shortly after Eugene de Blanche was killed, I was convinced that Robert Mugabe and Julius Malema had organized the assassination of Eugene de Blanche. I wrote about it, and I need to go and dig through my old archives. There's still lots of my old archives that I haven't fully processed. But I need to dig through that, because I'm absolutely convinced that Eugene de Blanche's murder was a precursor to real land invasion. But all that happened was Eugene de Blanche was killed, and then nothing else further that we know about. So there may have been other things that went on that we don't know about. I do want to tell you that in investigations that I've done here in South Africa, whenever I've gone to places where whites have been attacked and things have gone on, And I've spoken to local whites and people who are linked to the police, etc. I've always heard additional stories that you never see in the press, and that there's a lot that Africa that will never make it into the mass media. There are times when farmers and farmers groups stop stuff and deal with problems, and you don't even hear about it. You actually have to go and you have to know those people personally and go and see them, and then they'll quietly tell you the story and show you the evidence. So make no mistake that whites are not totally helpless in South Africa, that whites, including farmers and police and private investigators, do many things that you will never see in the mass media.
So it sounds like the pretty much assassination or slash murder of Terre Blanche was pretty much the kickoff for the invasion of white farmers' lands, because I feel like it's going to be a lot harder for blacks in the ANC to overrun these white farmers if Eugene is alive. Maybe that was a precursor, a perfect the kickoff. Yeah, I've never heard that side of this.
That was my take on it. My take on it was that if Eugene Tablanche was alive, that he would definitely have rallied his people. And the blacks would know it. They would know it. But I cannot prove further that other things happened. There's other stuff about South Africa that I'm going to put out that people don't even know I have. Because I had other supporters and other people that I communicated with back then when I was doing my website 10 and 15 years ago. So there are things that you are going to hear that you are just not going to believe. But I'm going to show it to you, and I've even got audio recordings where you're going to hear people who are now dead. You're going to hear what they have to say. You're in for some surprises. Then you'll understand more about what I'm telling you.
Jan, I was pretty impressed with the video that you put out, A Warning to America. And, I don't think it got a whole lot of traction. And I think that it probably should have gotten a whole lot more traction than it did. You know, I've seen it shared on Gab a couple of times, but, you know, how important is that video for white Americans to hear?
You know, I sit and think all the time about the similarities between America and South Africa. There are so many similarities, and I see it even now all the time. And I look at South Africa and I say to myself, you know, look at this thing that's happening here. This is how America is going to be, you know, when America, you know, gets round to collapsing. The parallels between South Africa specifically and America, there are so many similar things, because South Africa is super rich for its size. And so these Boer territories, the Jews came here to steal the gold and diamonds and all the minerals. And they came here for a reason. This place is loaded, okay? The money, the mines alone are the only thing that makes this country run, okay? And so white South Africa was much more advanced than Rhodesia or any other place in Africa, okay? There's no country in Africa ever achieved first world status. In other words, the same status as America and Europe. In fact, in the 1960s, South Africa, white South Africans had the highest standard of living in the entire world. They had a better standard of living than any of you anywhere. That's how advanced South Africa was in the 60s. Money was rolling in left, right, and center. And so South Africa has an infrastructure that is totally unique to all of the infrastructure of Africa. people, whites who've traveled to Africa and traveled to different countries in Africa, and then they come to South Africa, they immediately see the difference. I've heard of non-whites who've pitched up here, people from the Middle East, who've pitched up to South Africa, and when they get here, they say, but this is like Europe. And yes, because South Africa's got insane infrastructure, okay? It's got incredible infrastructure. So South Africa used to be a very advanced country with very high standards, but it was a small group of whites, mainly Boers, who controlled this country under apartheid, okay? And the whites were just few in number, that's all. They were 20% of the population or less. And as time went by, they became less. But it was basically a white-run country with first-world standards. And there are so many parallels when I see how the whites used to be, how the whites used to love money. My own family, my family that lived in South Africa, all they could think of is money, business, striking deals, etc. They weren't interested in being in the army. They weren't interested in politics. They weren't interested in history. They weren't interested in any of those things. It was just, make money, buy beer, have parties, and life is good. Really, that's how life used to be 40 and more years ago in South Africa. So the similarity, and I see Americans partying and having fun. And all those things are exactly the same. And so for you people, you've got stuff coming at you that you are not in any way, shape, or form prepared for. You are not expecting. And I also see the kinds of lies that the liberals and Jews have told you. And I must tell you that they've really made it so that you're going to have an even harder time than the whites here. At least the majority of whites here were racist. The whites were always suspicious of the blacks, though they weren't suspicious of the Jews. But your people are going to go through quite a nightmare as they see things really entering modes that they never imagined was possible. When I wrote my book, Government by Deception, one of the people I gave it to was my dentist. He's a good Boer guy. And I decided to give him a copy for free. I said to him, I've written this. It's actually a warning to people. Here's a copy for you. And I still go to the same dentist. And nowadays, he always reminds me, he says, you know, Jan, when you gave me that book, I used to think South Africa can never, never become like Rhodesia. And here we are. It is now like Zimbabwe. And so he said, I never believed it could happen. And so there are many things that you people will see as time goes by where you'll literally be reading things out of history books, including Jew stuff, you know, the kinds of stuff that the Germans saw with the Jews. So there's lots of stuff that you will look at America and you'll say, you know what, it's been so good here. These people just cannot do this and this and this. But in actual fact, you'll see them do it. Although in some places in your country, they have already done it. Like, look at all the mayors, the black mayors, who've ruined entire cities. Whole cities in your country have been absolutely ruined. And it should be obvious to you that blacks are incompetent boobs and they are corrupt and stupid and they get up to all kinds of crap. You know, you people actually have got lots of cities, you know, where you can see that.
And this is considering the fact that there's, I believe Jan in one of his works, that there's over roughly $80 trillion in untapped minerals and precious metals in the ground in South Africa. And well, it looks like we lost Jan.
No, I'm here. I'm just on mute.
Oh, sorry.
I'm listening to you.
Apparently there's, maybe I was wrong. I think you mentioned that there's double-digit trillions worth of precious metal in the grounds in South Africa.
Yes.
Well, referring to your
comment.
Yes,
even now. Even now, there's something, I think it's like $40 trillion worth of untapped mineral resources in South Africa right now. So you know, South Africa is insanely, has got insane wealth. Okay. And, but, you know, anything about how we're going down, you can point it all to blacks. And I must tell you, I'm watching the Jews and the liberals trying to control the blacks, and it's not working so well. So I'm very pleased with that. So they believe there's a bunch of stuff you're going to hear next year. The liberals and Jews, basically the Jew-controlled party here, a thing called the DA, they are convinced that they might be able to drive the black ANC out of power next year. And I will believe it when I see it. And yeah. You're going to hear lots of people talk about that. You're going to hear lots of people talk about it. We will watch and see what happens, because I find it impossible to believe.
It's very true. It's about time someone stood up to the ANC and survived. And on to our last question here. But before, sorry if I got children screaming in the background. But on to the last question here. How I've heard about this Cape Independence movement here for about half a year to a year. And I'm just curious as to how realistic this is. Is it a primarily white Africana thing? Or is it what is it? Do you think the ANC is realistically even going to listen to this? What do you make of it?
Okay, this is very interesting. When I wrote Government by Deception, you'll even see in Government by Deception, there's a point where I talk about whites maybe going to the Cape and that we could defend ourselves in the Cape. That was my thinking back then. And you know what? I think some of my thinking actually spread because back then there were only a tiny, tiny groups of whites who were thinking about Cape independence. But nowadays, it's a big thing. And I know some of the people that are involved in it. And one of the prime players is Dr. Peter Hammond. Dr. Peter Hammond is a Christian, but he's a good Christian, and he's actually a South African who grew up in Rhodesia. Dr. Peter Hammond is pretty good. So Dr. Peter Hammond is definitely not a liar. And he's one of a number of people who are doing Cape independence movement. And they are doing it legally, because you have to do it legally. So that means that they have gone out and they've gone to non-whites and asked them to vote and support this Cape independence thing. But there are quite a bunch of people involved. What astounds me is how these whites have managed to market themselves even to non-whites. And so they've actually got millions of people who are interested in this. It's probably more than 3 million people, maybe close to 4 million people, somehow signed up for these different groups. So they are carrying on, but there are legal challenges. When you do secession, you've got to follow a bunch of legal processes. And at a point, you have to start actually getting mandates from your supporters. And you have to reach a certain number. And so depending on the geographical area that's going to break away, because some of these movements are for all of the Cape to break away. Others are for parts of the Cape to break away. And some have made more progress than others, okay? But at a point, they've got to get to a point where they've got enough numbers on paper that they can say, okay, we can now start the process of filing the legal documents in order to secede. Secession is a process. So when you start seceding, you basically have to start setting up the government and the police and the army that you're going to need. And so there's a internationally accepted process that you've got to follow. The first hurdle that all these groups face is that they've got to get numbers. They've got to get high enough numbers so that they can go to that level. And that is the first big hurdle that they face. They've got impressive numbers, but those numbers might not be enough. So that's the first hurdle they face. If they do manage to get over that hurdle, then the next hurdle will be filing the legal documents, and that's when it's going to start getting really interesting. There was a guy who tried to do his own secession in 2018 or so, and he actually did it, and he went quite wild, and he did a couple of things. He even went and, like, took down a flag, and he had some he had some coloreds who were going to do this, and they had a leader who was going to be the president, but they then kind of faded away. So they were like small scale stuff compared to the thing that is there now. All these other people are much more serious. They got 100 times more funding and 100 times more numbers. They got much bigger numbers. So these guys who are doing it now, they are interesting. I like the idea of them running around because you'll find that behind all these Cape Secession movements, you'll find that it is literally 100% white driven. Okay. At the end of the day, the people who are thinking this stuff up, who are doing these programs and who are even doing, and even the people who've done all the legal stuff, everything in South Africa that's been done that's secession related, everything has been done by white lawyers, including my own lawyer. He was involved in drawing up secession legislation. So whites are the real moving force who want secession to happen. But they're trying to now do it in this mishmash kind of a way, according to these rules that they are stuck with. So we'll need to see how far these people get in 5 and 10 years' time. And it's quite possible, I think, that their numbers will grow because the country is going backwards and even non-whites are starting to lose faith. So whether they can get over the hurdles in the next 5 years and somebody can declare a secession, we need to see. However, none of this effort is wasted because it's all good stuff and it teaches people stuff and so forth. My own thinking is that if these multiracial liberal types secession movements don't succeed, and remember, all of them have got lots of whites in them, so even if they are multiracial and they were to succeed, then the whites would have much more power in those organizations. Whites would, between you and me, whites would be controlling and directing like 50% or more than 50% of the stuff, probably. So I don't see any of these things resulting in a situation where the whites are going to lose control. There are going to be too many whites involved in them. But let's say they don't succeed. Then what I think in the future, the long-term plan, I'm thinking, is that if we find secession doesn't succeed truly, then what we need to do is in 10 or more years' time, we need to actually gather, we need to look at getting whites as a group together and finding places that can secede, because there are many places where there are still lots of whites around. There's one particular urban area that I really, really like. I've had a look at it a lot, and I've traveled there and so forth, and it's got a big white population. So I want to tell you that I still think that if all other methods fail, that whites can still secede one day, but they're going to have to do it like this. Whites are going to have to pick an area, and whites are going to have to form a militia, and whites are going to have to physically go and occupy that place and stand their ground there, declare the secession, and be ready with guns and say, no police, no army will be allowed in here. So that's my long-term thinking for how we could do secession, whites only, in decades to come. That is still a possibility. And I think that that could still be done easily one day. The thing is to get the whites to understand the issues and to be in the mood for doing it. It's definitely, that is, let's call it the plan B of secession that I've been thinking of. So So let's see how the plan A works out and whether any of them can get over the goalpost. Because my own thinking is that if they do manage to get past the first goalpost, that the ANC will cheat them at the next goalpost. But let's see how far they get, because maybe they can get further and then we learn more. So secession is going to be the only game in town in South Africa in the future.
I see. And it all really revolves around the ANC. I hope the ANC doesn't try to pull a slick one and try to get everyone's guard down by proposing this new party that's going to fix South Africa and, you know, watch it be a ANC in disguise, and then everyone lets their guard down and then the independence movement washes away. So I hope nothing like that happens either. Hope no one's tricked into letting their guard down. I hope it's, like I've heard you say, South Africa could break into several smaller little countries over the next 10 to 20 years, depending on how the ANC handles things. And yeah, not smooth.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. That is why I look at all the problems and the stuff that's happening. And I personally believe that I've seen enough of liberalism and diversity that I'll tell you a little secret, is that no matter how much they talk liberalism and diversity, in reality, it always boils down to race. I've even seen the Indians and the Muslims moving away from the blacks. And the blacks are their own, do their own thing. The coloreds do their own thing. The Indians do their own thing. There are more groups than just whites. You must include coloreds. The colored population is quite large, eh? The colored population is almost as large as the number of whites. The Indian population is half the number, is half the size of the white population. So you've got coloreds, you've got Indians, you've got whites. And you've got all these people who are higher IQ, okay? And I must tell you that those groups, if they cooperate with each other in the slightest way, all kinds of weird things are possible. The possibility, for example, of a Indian or Muslim little enclave in South Africa, a little Muslim state in South Africa, that could happen. That could happen. A colored state in South Africa could happen.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Well, definitely. It's the same here in Europe.
So,
like all the Muslims have their own neighborhoods and everything, yeah.
So let me tell you this whole nonsense that everyone's going to work together. No. And one of the ironies that I saw, one of the greatest good pieces of news that I saw, which I still want to revisit when I tackle the videos, is in 2021, there was that massive violence in South Africa. And I went and I met people who were involved in that, especially in Natal. And I want to tell you something that happened in Natal that's never happened in the history of South Africa. When those blacks were swarming to attack all those shopping malls and warehouses of the rich, the blacks came to attack the warehouses and shopping malls of the rich because of our president, right? So they weren't specifically looking at just at attacking whites to kill whites, and no whites were injured in this. But interestingly enough, the stress between the Indians. In South Africa, Indian and Muslim is pretty much the same thing. Most of the Indians are Muslims. Most of the Muslims are Indian. So Indian and Muslim see it as one thing. So when these blacks were swarming to attack these places, there was a suburb called Phoenix. And this suburb was occupied by Indians/Muslims. And the blacks decided that they're going to sweep into Phoenix and kill all the Indians. This was in July 2021. When they did so, the Indians turned out to have guns, and the Indians started fighting back. And the Indians killed a bunch of blacks. They killed at least 38 blacks, maybe even more. They killed at least 38 blacks, drove the blacks off, and I even have film footage where Indians went and set fire to black shanty towns. Okay? So one of the greatest outcomes of the 2021 violence was that, A, for the first time in the history of South Africa, Indians shot and killed blacks and drove them off. That's never happened before. The second thing is that whites and Indians were working together to defend suburbs and things. So that event in 2021 opened up the real possibility of whites and Indians having a little bit of cooperation when it comes to blacks. So I'll tell you something. When I wrote my book, I was pointing to the coloreds. The coloreds are the only non-whites who voted for the National Party, the white political party of apartheid, after black rule. Okay? After black rule, the National Party still existed. Coloreds were the only non-whites that voted for whites. So I was saying back then that in the Cape, you get lots of coloreds, but there are also coloreds now spreading around South Africa. And those coloreds also have their stresses with blacks. And the beauty about South Africa, here's the beauty about it, is that the blacks have been on the front. The blacks have basically had carte blanche to run South Africa as they please since 1994. And all of the races have had a chance to watch black failure. So don't think that the Indians didn't see the blacks failing, that the coloreds didn't see the blacks failing, and also that between them they've got stresses. So a very strange possibility, I think, a very strange possibility is think of multiple little countries that could come into being, and if they do come into being, possible alliances between whites and other races like coloreds and Indians. So all these things are very possible. That's why I'm totally in favor of civil war breakdown, etc., because I reckon that when this thing goes down, people will be amazed at how the blacks are going to become the biggest losers of all. People are not even going to be able to believe how much the blacks can be driven back. And I'll tell you something, these coloreds, just the other day I was talking to a black, and the black was saying to me, he avoids suburbs where the coloreds are. He says the coloreds will drop, coloreds will kill you. And this black is scared shitless of coloreds. So I want to tell you, all these decades of sticking together, it's not the one group that is the big freaking loser and fools are the blacks. Everyone looks at them and they say, but these blacks, they're doing nothing. Blacks aren't fixing the power, and everyone's starting to see it. So that's why secession and any kind of wild breakup, All you literally need in South Africa is one secession to work. And if one secession works for a month, you could have people all over this country suddenly starting to secede left, right, and center. And it would include non-whites as well. And these, the Indians, I've seen the Indians have got guns, and the coloreds, they steal what they need. they are wild, okay? So let me tell you, if you think that these blacks are gonna walk over all the others, you could actually see the opposite. And the whites themselves are the major power that still exists. They just don't realize it.
Yep.
John, I got a question I'd like to ask on the power outages. Is this due to incompetency, or is this a type of control that they're implementing on people? The power outages, like they were doing this like during the war in Iraq or right afterwards. So is this like a control thing for the people, or is it just complete incompetency? What's your take on that?
with the blacks, I used to think that the blacks were capable of certain amounts of deception, etc. Nowadays, I don't even consider that. When you investigate everything, you'll see it's all plain incompetence. All of it. Everything. The police don't work. The army doesn't work. Nothing. The more the blacks take control, the less it works. The airline doesn't work. The post office has literally collapsed totally. The post office, South African post office, is literally non-existent in terms of functionality. All the things that we used to have that used to work are collapsing. And I must say that the electricity, not only the blacks have pumped insane amounts of money into it, and it's still collapsing. So make no mistake, all of the black failure it's from blacks, due to blacks, and it's all incompetence, laziness. They can't control their own people. They can't even lead their own people. I've watched blacks. Blacks are even useless as leaders of blacks. So their stuff doesn't work.
Yeah, I could.
This stuff doesn't work.
Anything that gets done in South Africa or even started has started by white minds. No doubt about that. Hopefully the secession movements start tumbling. Maybe they snowball over the next 5 to 10 years. We're hoping so, because the stronger ones will always emerge the victors through chaos, and that's the one thing about chaos. It is fair, I guess, to say. And we got to consolidate and organize, and knowing's half the battle. That's why you got to be out there listening to Jan and his productions, definitely. And
great stuff, great explaining this to us. Thank you.
Yeah, and we're kind of running out of time here, and I know my phone is almost dead. I didn't bring a battery charger with me. Jan, did you want to talk about your website real quick before we just give a shout out to your website, let people know where they can find you, let the people know about your Telegram pages?
Okay, you can find my website. My main website is historyreviewed.com. My other website is africancrisis.info. I've got Telegram channels that are public. You just have to search Telegram for History Reviewed. There's also a History Reviewed TV where I upload my entire videos, and you can get a physical copy of the video and watch it on your phone. And there's also African Crisis on as well. So you can find those things on Telegram. I am on BitChute. You can find me on Gab as Jay Lamprecht. So I'm also on Odyssey as well. Just look for History Reviewed on Odyssey and History Reviewed on BitChute. Thank you very much for having me on your show. It's been a real honor.
Awesome having you on. And is it possible to have you back on at a later time? We have a lot more we'd like to ask and cover.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Thank you very much for coming on. It's a pleasure to meet you. Pleasure to meet you and listen to you. Thank you. A lot to learn.
It was great talking to you again. I hope to have a part two on our Rhodesia discussion in the future. And I learned so much. Thank you for joining us today. And Ivar, you want to say something? Ivar, you there? Okay. Well, anyways, it was great having you on, Jan.
Yeah, thanks for being here. It was very interesting indeed.
Well, definitely have to get you another part two on this, get you back into it. We have a lot more questions. So,
yeah, I think it's very important because we take all these things for granted, right? For example, if you even have issues with having a bank, like, we can't even imagine that, right? And if that's in the future for us as well, obviously... we need to try our absolute hardest to prevent that from happening because that's pretty frustrating. Yeah. I can imagine.
It is. And as our numbers go down, it's inevitable as we start getting replaced. Great points on that, Jeff. Yeah.
Well, let me just quickly add in to you that among the first things that we've had to learn to do is look after our own security. are physical security. You have no idea all the things that we've had to learn to do just in order to be able to function in daily life and not be robbed or killed. So that is the first problem that you run into. Yeah. So there's lots of stuff, but all of it's survivable. And once you, you know, if we just get into our European mindset, our National Socialist mindset, Roman mindset, let me tell you, nobody can stop us. Chaos can become your friend. So don't you believe others are just going to rule. Wait until the white man steps into the chaos. Then you're going to see the fun start.
We'll turn it around.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I always tell people too. I'm like, I actually still believe in our people, right? I think once things become so dire and people will start to see the actual problem, we will find a solution. The problem is that not enough people currently see the problem, right? They're mostly focused on trying to focus things like sustainability and global warming and all this nonsense, which we are good at solving as long as we actually have an issue to work towards, whether that issue is real or not, let's say.
You are quite right. And I will quickly add in, jamming this in for you, is in looking at various Hitler memoirs that I've been going through, it becomes very clear to me. I've been getting more and more information where you can see Hitler faced the same problem. He had a problem of education, and the amount of insane effort, sacrifice, and personal struggle that Hitler and all the early Nazis had to go through is incredible. So those people, they really rev their thing up and work like maniacs to get the message to people. The one guy I was reading, he was saying that he was married and he was working with Hitler. This is before Hitler came to power. And he was saying that in the entire year, he only got to spend 42 days with his wife. All the other days, he was with Hitler on the road. And that was years before. So you've got to see the things that Hitler did required monumental effort for him. So we must also just roll up our sleeves, dive in, go crazy, because the bottom line is simply, and when you look at Hitler, you'll see that Hitler was a teacher. There's a place also where Hitler says he needs 30 years. He needs 30 years to fix the German people. So Hitler understood and focused explicitly on knowledge and teaching people. And I must tell you that from what I've seen with my own experiences, if we do that, that is what's going to really pay dividends. Once white people understand the issues, you're going to see, let me tell you, nobody is going to be able to stop the white man. Nobody will be able to stop him. Once the men and women understand the issues, and they say, okay, so this is the problem. This is the problem, and that's the solution. You'll see whites will be, I'm warning you, man, whites will tear things down within a few weeks and months. Okay, they won't muck around. And don't worry, our DNA, we're still intact. We're still intact.
Yeah. United, we stand.
United, we stand. Knowing's half the battle. All right, guys, we're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Jan, thank you again for being on. And we'll look forward to seeing you again. And everyone have a great day, okay?
Give up, my friend. If you don't see the end, if you don't see the top, don't stop. We know you'll win. Every fight you'll fight, every game you play, you'll reach the top. At the top, that is where you'll stay.